Well, thank you, Mr. Klein. Good afternoon, everyone. Hello to everyone on the web as well. I'm just going to get right into it. In the midst of a raging war, a plane evacuating a group of schoolboys from Britain is shot down over a deserted tropical island. The pilot and another man on the plane do not survive. But all of the boys do. They ranged in age from 12 to 6, or from 6 to 12. Well, so now what? Well, the boys select a leader, which would be, you know, a pretty logical thing to do. And they decide that they should keep a signal fire burning in the event of a passing ship. And they delegate some responsibilities, such as hunting and gathering what they can on the island to survive. You know, all pretty logical stuff. I think we'd all start out with a similar plan if we were in that circumstance. But things turn ugly. Another of the older boys, one of the hunters, well, he wants to be the leader. And he's prone to violence, but, you know, he's charismatic enough to start getting support from some of the other boys. Well, this group splits off, and tensions mount between the two camps. The hunters kill a pig on the island, cut off its head, and place it on a stick in the ground. Later, one boy from the other group encounters this pig's head. It's, you know, it's rotting, and it's covered with flies. The boy calls this gruesome head on a spike Lord of the Flies. Now, Lord of the Flies was a 1954 novel written by William Golding. It's ranked as one of the top 100 novels of the 20th century. You know, it didn't start out as a good seller, but by the 1980s, 100,000 copies per year were printed, and currently it sold more than 10 million copies. Now, I'm going to reference this book and its story in this message, but I give it no recommendations. It's not a story about love. Let's go to Numbers 25. Let's start there, if you would like to join me. Numbers 25, let's read verses 1 through 3 in Numbers chapter 25. Let's read verses 1 through 3. Numbers 25, and starting in verse 1, the Bible reads, "Now Israel remained in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel was joined to Baal of Peor, and the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel." Well, we read here in Numbers that Israel bowed down to other gods, and in particular, Baal of Peor. Now, Peor was the name of the mountain that was referenced in the previous chapter in Numbers. This is where Balaam was supposed to curse Israel, but instead he ended up blessing Israel. And he foretold of the destruction of Moab and of the other enemies of Israel. Baal means owner, or master, or lord. Now, we also take this word to mean a false god or an idol. So Baal of Peor was the god of that mountain, or more generically, the god of the area. But often in the Bible, Baal is used standalone. We won't turn there, but in Judges 2 and verse 11, the Bible reads, "Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals." That wasn't referring to a specific false god, but the general idea of them. So there were quite a few false gods that we can read about in the Bible. Well, there's another Hebrew word, zavuv, Z-U-V-U-V. And sometimes it's also spelled and pronounced with B's instead of E's, so like zebub. Now, this word means insect, or in particular, fly. So when you put Baal, meaning lord or master, and zebub, meaning fly, together, you get Lord of the Flies. That's where the title of this novel comes from. Now, in the novel, the boys were scared of a beast that they could not see, but believed it to be on the island with them. They even kind of supposed that this beast was hiding in the sea, which was one reason why they never saw it during the day. I mean, I think you can imagine the imagination of boys running wild. Well, this rotting pig head, the Lord of the Flies, with the flies buzzing around it, appears to talk to one of the boys. It tells the boy that he will never escape him, for he, you know, evil, basically, is found and exists within all men. Nothing good happens in this story. Violence and murder take place. In the end, the boys that do remain are full of regret after they are eventually rescued. I mean, it's a sad, awful story. It is fiction, this story. It never happened. Yet, it's not hard to imagine that such a story could take place. God is not mentioned in the novel, and I think that's my point. Without God, something will fill that void. In this case, it was Baal-zebub, Lord of the Flies. Now, we're told in the Bible that the earth was filled with violence during the time before the Great Flood. I mean, it's not hard to picture the people being like the boys on that island, right? And with people and cultures creating gods on the spot, I'm sure there was a Baal Everest and a Baal Matterhorn, just like we read about the Baal of Peor in Numbers chapter 25. You know, there was probably a Baal for each river, along with a boatload of Baals in each culture. Baal or other groups of gods or other names like Molech are revealed throughout the Old Testament. And in a lot of cases, these gods required child sacrifices. Or, you know, more accurately, the people who created these gods sort of made child sacrifices, you know, kind of a defining element. And I guess still more accurately, Satan wanted this aspect to be implemented. I mean, there is one Baal, and he is real. We know him as Satan. So at the time of Noah, you know, I can just imagine all the violence on the earth, can't you? And the story told in Lord of the Flies with the violence and death of children also it also fits this pattern of false gods. There's no love, there's no respect, there's no cooperation, there's no empathy. There's just violence. Let's go to Mark chapter 3. We'll read verses 20 through 22. If you would like to join me in Mark chapter 3. We'll read verses 20 through 22. Just think we'll read about one of the many encounters Jesus had with the religious leadership here. Mark 3, and starting in verse 20, the Bible reads, "Then the multitude came together again, so that they could not so much as eat bread. But when his own people heard about this, they went out to lay hold of him, for they said, 'He is out of his mind.' And the scribes who came down from Jerusalem said, 'He has Beelzebub, and by the ruler of demons, he casts out demons.'" You know, again, this is one of the many encounters that Christ had with the religious leadership at the time. Now, from parallel accounts in Matthew and Luke, Jesus here cast a demon out of a man. And the scribes accused Jesus of doing this with Satan's power. You know, the scribes and Pharisees, they didn't like Jesus. They hated him. Beelzebub, who the scribes concluded was responsible for the power of Jesus when he healed, is another name for Satan. Now, Beelzebub, the spelling and pronunciation is pretty close, right? It's basically Hebrew to Greek. They are one in the same. Lord of the Flies is Beelzebub, Satan. On the island, the boys were scared of a beast they couldn't see. I mentioned that earlier. Beelzebub, Beelzebub, Lord of the Flies. I mean, Satan is a beast none of us can see. And if boys on an island, you know, people or cultures, past or present, have replaced our great God with false gods, violence will be the result. The time of Noah tells us this. The time now tells us this. You know, no story is going to end well with God being absent or replaced. But there's another story. Six schoolboys, ranging in age from 13 to 16, were bored one day. Sitting in a strict Catholic boarding school on a Pacific island, they decided they needed to escape, if, you know, just for a short while. The problem was that they didn't own a boat. Well, that didn't stop them. They stole the boat from a local fisherman that they didn't really like, and they quickly packed it up with, you know, bananas and a few coconuts, and that was about it. No map, no compass. They quietly departed the island at evening with, you know, just a faint breeze in the air. Well, after night came, they made the mistake of falling asleep. Ruh-roh. They awoke to waves crashing over their heads as a big storm came upon them. They hoisted the sail, but the wind had promptly just ripped it to shreds. Next, their rudder broke. Well, being bored and stealing a boat for an adventure, it maybe didn't seem like such a good idea. No. Well, they drifted helplessly at sea for 8 days. But then they spotted an island, and they managed to make their way to it. You know, it wasn't this, you know, nice tropical paradise island with palm trees and sandy beaches that you may be thinking of, but, you know, this was rather just basically a huge rock jutting out of the ocean with really steep cliffs and rocks along the shore. But, you know, they did find land. 18 months passed. Well, then a fishing boat wandered by the island, and six very happy boys swam out to the boat and were rescued. Lord of the Flies is a fictional story. This story of these six boys in the Pacific, however, really happened. It was 1965, and the boys were students at St. Andrew's College in Tonga. Now, Tonga is an island about 500 miles from Fiji in the South Pacific. The boys decided that they were going to sail to Fiji, but were shipwrecked on the deserted island called Ata, A-T-A. When they were first on the island, they made a crude shelter in the rocks along the shore. You know, the cliffs, again, were really steep, and they couldn't get up the sides. Now, they could see that there were trees and vegetation up on top, but they just couldn't find a way up. There were quite a few seabirds that nested within the rocks and cliffs. So with the birds and some fish to scavenge, the boys were able to get enough food and just enough water to survive their time along the shore. Well, eventually they did actually find a route up the mountainside. It took them 2 days to get to this whole other world above the cliffside. You know, there were coconut trees, beans, and even chickens up there. Previously, there had been a small group of people that had lived on the island, and some of the domesticated chickens survived. You know, there were pineapples and bananas, and they could make a proper shelter up top. Well, after 6 months, they almost came to live comfortably on this deserted island. They ended up corralling about 200 of these chickens, so they had eggs to supplement their diet. They managed to collect rainwater in tree trunks. There was wood for fires, so they didn't have to eat raw meat. You know, this does not sound like Lord of the Flies. While the British schoolboys in the fictional story descended quite rapidly into violence, you know, because of pride and selfishness, these Tonga schoolboys, they seem to thrive. In documentaries about these Tonga castaways, a very insightful element was revealed. The Tonga boys prayed daily. They are quoted as saying that they were there because of the grace of God. They began each day with a prayer and a song of praise. And one boy said that they all prayed each evening as well. They thanked God daily. They retained their faith in the Almighty, this documentary asserts. One of the boys said that God gave them that island and saved them. Again, they thanked God daily. They were shipwrecked on an island alone with no idea how long they would be marooned, and they thanked God daily. Let's go to Psalm 118 and read verse 24. Psalm chapter 118. And let's read verse 24 together. Psalm 118 and verse 24, the Bible reads, "This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." How often do you have days of trouble? You know, God makes this world. He made this world, and he makes each day. He doesn't prevent all the troubles we experience, but I find this to be pretty powerful scripture here. Whatever our circumstances, rejoice, be glad, and give thanks. If you lost your job, if you suffered a tragedy, if you are shipwrecked on an island, rejoice, be glad, and give thanks. If you can do this in whatever day you are having, you are a child of God, and he will never forget it. But follow a false god, any Baal, Beelzebub, Satan will relish in your suffering. And he will hope you will respond with hate. And violence is just such a simple step from hatred. On the island, the Tonga boys decided to work as a team and cooperate. But this cooperation actually had started when they were adrift for those 8 days on the boat. They managed to collect rainwater in hollowed out coconut shells, and they shared the water equally among them. It was one sip of water in the morning and one sip in the evening. That was it. There was no greed or selfishness displayed. They agreed to work in teams of two on the island, drawing up a strict roster for things, you know, like gardening and kitchen and fire duties. Sometimes they quarreled, but they had a plan for this, a self-imposed timeout. They would walk away from disputes for several hours. That helped quite a bit with the tensions. You know, even on a deserted island, if there's another person in your life, there's bound to be issues. We're all human. We all fail. Their solution to separate themselves at times was, actually pretty smart. There's the saying, time heals all wounds, and that's probably true even in the short term. Quoting one of the boys from the documentary, "That's how we stayed alive and did not fight. We trusted God." Well, the boys decided that they should keep a fire going constantly. And they were pretty diligent about it and kept a fire going for over one solid year. They never left it unattended, and they never let it go out. Let's go to Romans 12. Let's read verses 9 through 11 if you would like to join me in Romans chapter 12. Together, let's read verses 9 through 11. Romans chapter 12. And starting in verse 9, the Bible reads, "Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. In honor, giving preference to one another. Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord." You know, I'd like to paraphrase the the beginning of verse 11 in what we just read. What we just read from the New King James translation states, not lagging in diligence. Other translations read, never be lacking in zeal, or stay excited. I'd say, never let your fire go out. The boys here give us this spiritual lesson of keeping our fire going. Endure. And do this with joy and thanksgiving. If you can do this, you're a child of God. In The Lord of the Flies, the boys also decided that they should start a fire and keep it going. So, I mean, just like the Tonga boys' line of thinking, it made a lot of logical sense. I mean, a passing ship may see the fire. But if for nothing else, it'll generate heat and you can cook food. But the British schoolboys from the novel got distracted. And they weren't diligent. And eventually they just kind of dropped the idea. The fire went out. Beelzebub, Beelzebub will do what he can to take us off track. And he will cause the little conflicts we have to grow into hate. And again, with hate, violence is just such a simple step. But there wasn't any hate or violence on the island of Ada. The boys kept busy with tasks and sports. They even made a guitar from pieces of the boat wreck, coconuts, and some box wire that they scavenged. I'm sure any one of those boys would have much more musical talent than I'll ever have. They admitted afterwards that there was a lot of joy on that island, even though they obviously, you know, they wanted to be rescued, they wanted to be back home. Now, contrast this joy with the boys on the island of Lord of the Flies. There's not any joy in that story. Again, God is not in that story. Now, there were times when the Tonga castaways argued and were unhappy, but, you know, those times didn't last. One of the boys recalled, quote, if someone got really mad, like if I planned something and they didn't do it, you just disappear for a few hours. Look at the ocean and clear it out of your mind. 15 months after these boys set out on their adventure, the Australian fish trawler named the Just David was passing by the island on September 11th of 1966. Peter Warner of Sydney, Australia, was the captain. He was just out there searching for new fishing grounds. One crew member heard some shouting coming from the island. Well, soon six long-haired and naked boys swam out to the boat. Now, when Captain Warner returned the boys home to Tonga, obviously there was, you know, unimaginable joy expressed by their family and friends. But what do you think was the first thing that happened to the boys when they returned? Yep, they were arrested. Yeah, remember, they had stolen a boat to use to start their adventure with. But Captain Warner paid the owner for the boat and kind of smoothed things over with everyone. You know, there were 3 days and nights of feasting. Almost the entire island population, about 900 people, joined in the celebration. Captain Warner remarked in later interviews that he felt very much like he was bringing home six prodigal sons. Now, this parable in the Bible is of a son who yearns for life away from home, for adventure, but, you know, he soon wastes his inheritance recklessly and foolishly. These Tonga boys did steal a boat and were foolish, like the prodigal son. The prodigal son learned a valuable lesson of what truly is important, and I kind of think that these Tonga schoolboys were maybe a little less reckless in life after their adventure on the island. Now, it's a little challenging to contrast and compare the fictional story from Lord of the Flies with the Tonga castaways. I mean, the British schoolboys who resorted to selfishness, hatred, and violence, this never happened. It was a story that could have had joy in it and could have ended heroically, the author chose to tell the story how it was published. And the boys from The Lord of the Flies were a bit younger than the Tonga boys, so that could factor into casting a little bit of a shadow on a comparison. But the fact that The Lord of the Flies was written how it was, it makes the story believable. Who can doubt that living without God in your life, whether it be on a deserted island or not, life is soon going to lead to selfishness, recklessness, and hatred. Baal, meaning master or lord. Any Baal is a substitute god, one that fills the gap when our great creator God is ignored or replaced. There are many Baals revealed in the Bible, and many Baals revealed in historical documentation outside of the Bible as well. The title I gave this message is The Baals of History. According to Wikipedia, the Aztec culture, based in central Mexico, had dozens of gods. There were gods of nature, creation, fertility, death, culture, and even trade. There was a god of merchants and a god of medicine. All of these gods seemed to want blood and sacrifices. The belief was that human blood fed these gods and kept the sun from falling out of the sky. War captives, slaves, members of society, women, and children were all sacrificed. The Incan culture in South America, in Peru and the surrounding area, also had an abundance of God. Now, they had an abundance of gods. Much of this culture was wiped away when the Spanish forces conquered the Incas, but information was preserved about their religion. Sacred sites were spread all throughout their empire. And guess what? Child sacrifices were thought to be a great and honorable ritual to their gods. Now, predating the Aztec or Inca cultures, there was the civilization of Mesopotamia. Some consider this civilization as the birthplace of religion. Well, I would correct those who say such things and say that it was the birthplace of Baals. It is reported that from the first written records of religious practices, that they date to around 3500 BCE. That's about when Adam was halfway through his life. An article from Life Science magazine in June of 2018 describes a tomb that was uncovered from this area of Mesopotamia. Scientists date this tomb to have been built around 3000 BCE, maybe just about right after the time Adam died. The tomb contains the bones of two 12-year-olds, a boy and a girl. From how the bones were positioned and the artifacts surrounding the bones, the conclusion? These children were sacrificed. And around this tomb are the remains of eight others, ranging in age from 8 to 20. The archaeologist examined the careful dressings and positioning of the bodies and believed these additional eight children were what is called retainer sacrifices. These are people who are killed so they can accompany or serve the primary sacrifice in some afterlife. You know, pharaohs in Egypt would similarly have many servants sacrificed or killed for this purpose. Moloch is mentioned in the Bible eight times from Leviticus to Jeremiah. Several of these instances include the term pass through fire. I'm sure you've read that in your Bibles before, pass through fire. This representing how children were sacrificed to this god, to this Baal. For me, it's hard to imagine anything worse than the killing of a child. To end the life of a human so early so that the joy that is in this world cannot be experienced. That to me makes Satan most happy. Beelzebub, all the false gods in times past, they all wanted child sacrifices. The Lord of the Flies, Beelzebub, on that island, also took three of the boys in that fictional story. The boys in that story didn't worship this god, we're told. But in the absence of our great God, Baals will step in. When there's a gap to fill, Satan is going to fill it. And sacrifices will be made. And often, they are child sacrifices. Now, we know the wages of sin is death. That's Romans 6:23. I mean, it's illustrated throughout the Bible, and we tend to think of adults making bad choices, right? Choosing the Baals over God and paying this penalty. But think of the innocence of a child and child sacrifices, death, coming from the sin of others. God's mercy, which many do not understand, will come in the second resurrection for all those innocent children. Well, think about this in modern times. While people may not be worshiping Baals with rituals or procedures, with the absence of God, Baals are going to fill the gap. And child sacrifices that continue this day are almost beyond count. In 2014 alone, 926,190 abortions were performed in the United States. Almost a million in just one year in one country. Now, according to the usabortionclock.org, there's about one abortion performed in the world every second. And since 1980, there have been over 1.6 billion, billion, abortions performed. I mean, to end the life of a human so early so that the joy that is in this world cannot be experienced, that's going to make Satan most happy. You know, the Tonga castaways show us that if God is in our hearts and minds, there's no room for Baals. Were there struggles and conflicts on the island? You bet. I love this simple quote from one of the boys. If anyone had something they didn't like, they talk about it, and we say sorry, and then pray, and everything's okay. I'll point out again that these boys kept their campfire burning continuously for over a year. That physical act also represents their spiritual diligence. I mean, we referenced Romans 12:11 earlier, where the Bible tells us to not lag in diligence, not lack in our zeal, stay excited. The boys prayed daily and gave thanks daily. They did not let their fire go out. They endured. Baals have been created by men, and by that I mean by Satan, since the time of Adam. And most of humanity has either chosen Baals to follow or has had God absent in their lives. The story of the Lord of the Flies reflects a life without God. The story of the Tonga castaways reflects a life with God. These stories are polar opposites, as are the ways of God compared to the ways of Beelzebub, Satan. Let's close here in Isaiah 49. Let's read verses 14 through 15. If you'd like to join me in the book of Isaiah. Chapter 49, and we'll read verses 14 through 15. Isaiah 49, and starting in verse 14, the Bible reads, But Zion said, "The Lord has forsaken me, and my Lord has forgotten me. Can a woman forget her nursing child and not have compassion on the son of her womb? Surely they may forget. Yet I will not forget you." Isaiah here points out that humans may forget. Child sacrifices and past religions and abortions in this age will take place. Women will forget the compassion of the child in her womb. Tens of millions of abortions a year worldwide demonstrate this. As Isaiah points out, people may forget the innocence of children. The bales of history have worked very hard to ensure this, and they continue to this day. But God will always remember. However disheartened we may feel, God will not forget us. Let us not forget that. As we come into Passover season, there are many things that are going to be on our minds. And we'll be, but, you know, as we focus on the meaning of Christ's sacrifice, let's not forget to keep our fire burning. Let's work to find joy in this age. Seek it out. Christ is quoted as saying, "Be of good cheer," 8 times in the Gospels and in the book of Acts. Find that joy in life, which will help keep your spiritual fire ever burning. Happy Sabbath, everyone.